of bombs being dropped, Agent Orange, napalm. But I never blamed the GIs who were sent over there and who were really on the front lines, not by choice, but because, you know, Johnson and McNamara and President Nixon were prosecuting a war.
That's Glenn Silber, two-time Academy Award nominee, co-director of The War at Home, the classic 1979 documentary about anti-war protests in the 60s and 70s in Madison, Wisconsin. The film was just restored and re-released nationwide. Watch our full interview with Glenn Silber at democracynow.org. Stay tuned for our two New Year's specials. On Monday, New Year's Eve, we'll spend the hour with Noam Chomsky. And on Tuesday, New Year's Day, we bring you our exclusive documentary, 4 Days in Western Sahara, Africa's Last Colony. Well, that does it for our show. All of us at Democracy Now! Wish you a happy, healthy new year filled with peace, justice, and joy. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Coming up next on Positively Revolting, Ani discusses ICE with Francesco Aguirre, an organizer in the undocumented community, and takes your calls.
KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at kboo.fm/grantwriter2018.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Villa Esperanza Apartments, a low-income family housing community opening in Woodburn, Oregon, located at 1245 East Lincoln Street in Woodburn, an equal housing opportunity. More information is available by phone at 503-584-1992. 1992.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani. This is Positively Revolting. And this morning, we turn our focus on ICE, that's right, on immigrations and customs enforcement and the detentions, ICE detentions, and so much surrounding that issue. And to do that with us, to have that conversation with us, we have Francesco Aguirre. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we have Amy Sitars.
Good morning.
And here we are talking with you this morning. So we hope that you'll join us. There's a lot to discuss for this next hour. Let's go ahead and, you know, it seems like over this last couple of years, we've spent a good amount of time focusing on the treatment of immigrants. And as we saw in the spring, in May and June, with Trump's zero tolerance policy, suddenly there were headlines around the inhumane treatment. The issue was suddenly getting the attention it really deserves to get. And the idea of forced separation of families at the border really, It pricked the conscience of many Americans in a way that the issue had not really come through before. But now we are in this very fast sort of spin cycle of news, right? The 24-hour spin cycle. And a lot of that attention has been diffused over the last 6 months, so that even though the crisis remains, it's not reaching the headlines in a way that it did 6 months ago. And so for that reason, I'm really glad to have you both on the air this morning, talking about the work you're doing to organize resistance to ICE and its inhumane policies. So with that, let's start with a bit of an overview. I know, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, we still have, and when I say we, I mean the U.S., has over 14,000 minors in detention centers at this time. And this is a humanitarian crisis. It has been described by human rights experts that this is actually against international treaties, forced separation of families. Francisco, do you want to start with giving us just an overview of the scope of the problem?
Yes. First of all, thank you for having me here. The opportunity to speak to the people, you know, actually, what is going on in the country, I mean, it's a history, but not in a good way, you know, for that country. It's such a beautiful country, and now it's separating families. It's letting kids die in custody of the hands of ICE. And that, it's more than enough to stand up, you know, and say, no, that's not right, and it need to be changed, and we need to hold ICE accountable. We are Occupied ICE, PDX, and we are working tireless with a big community in the area, trying to hold, doing exactly that, holding ICE accountable. We believe we live in a sanctuary city where there is no space for ICE. There is no space for family separation. Or kids dying, but just space for love, you know, and compassion in our community. And that's what we are all about, and that's what it's ICE, you know, shouldn't be focused on separating us. I'm an immigrant, I'm undocumented, and I'm very proud to say it, that I will stand up until we see ICE is out of Portland.
I want to unpack that for a moment. I think that a lot of people don't have any idea, really, even well-intended people that are, you know, with the struggle, with the movement, don't really have an idea of what it's like to be an immigrant, or especially to be an immigrant without documentation. Can you talk about your experience, Francisco?
Yes. It's always there, you know. I'm always go out thinking that I might not come back home. Always planning new strategy with the idea that maybe I won't be able to accomplish it, because I know ICE can detain me anytime if they want to. Being undocumented and an activist at the same time, it's very difficult. Not easy at all.
Right.
You sleep thinking on ICE taking you in custody. You woke up thinking about ICE. You go to work thinking about ICE taking you in custody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your life always in danger.
You have this constant sort of fear.
Yes, yes. And it's okay to say, you know, that we are afraid, you know, that fear is with us all the time, because it is true. But at the same time, I use that fearness, you know, to empower myself and say, okay, but that won't stop me. I must stand up and work with my community. And something very important that it help us, you know, keep going, it's people in the community, you know, U.S. citizens that are actually standing in our favor. And that's when I say thank you, Occupied ICE PDX, because you are doing a wonderful job, because you are taking care of me. You know, that's how I feel. They create a safe space, you know, where immigrants like Francisco can do a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. to support our community. But again, it's not easy. And that's why many of the immigrants, they are afraid to come up publicly saying I'm undocumented and I will participate, or just come and participate on a public action, you know, because ICE is taking against us.
I want to invite our listeners to join us this morning. Our number is 503-231-8187. It's 503-231-8187. If you have comments or questions around the policies that are leading to these detentions, around ideas for the resistance to these policies, and how to turn this really horrendous situation around, please do give us a call this morning. That's 503-231-8187. This is KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani. I also want to encourage you to follow along Positively Revolting throughout the week on Facebook. You can also find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. So I want to actually bring Amy into the conversation and ask you about getting involved in Occupy ICE.
How did I get involved?
Yeah, you started getting involved with Occupy ICE over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was that involvement like for you?
It began with installation of the bronze shoes that I made across from the entrance to the ICE building, which was directly across from the camp itself. And when the shoes were taken down by a property owner whose property they were on, he threw them into the street, and members of the camp picked them up and strung them along the entrance to the camp and along the sidewalk, making them kind of a symbol for their movement.
So you want to talk about the bronze shoes, if some of our listeners haven't actually known about those.
They are a work that I made just after hearing about the crisis happening at the border with the separation of the families. And I, as an artist, had to do something about that. And having some separation trauma at a young age, I felt very passionately about the situation and came up with the idea to recreate bronze children's shoes. And when people would bronze their children's shoes, it was because they were precious. They were preserving a memory that was very precious. And so I was using those to remind people and the families that their children are precious and we won't forget about them.
Excuse me. We have, thanks very much for that. Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Good morning, Edie. You are on the air. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning. I loved your artwork with the shoes and the many places we held them up.
Thank you.
Outside the abolished camp where I was for a month, 8 to 24 hours a day, and on Terry Swank Plaza and at other locations, so thank you. I also wanted to have ask that you put up in different languages kind of an explanation for the shoes so that people would know, would understand more.
Sure.
I also have a question. Well, I am absolutely committed to abolishing ICE. And I want us to do much more in letting the public know how ICE itself is not law and order, but violating all these laws, including the location on Bancroft and McAdam, is already violating different laws. But and the border wall and all that stuff is actually violating so many different laws. My question is, in the interim between now and when we abolish ICE, and I want that ASAP, isn't it harder for families if the ICE detention is out of Portland? Because then they won't have the representatives, they won't have the public community, they won't have public transportation, they won't have lawyers, observers.
So you're talking about the families.
To and from.
So, Edie, just to clarify, you're talking about immigrant families that are required to do periodic check-ins with immigration enforcement. And
yeah, some already are having to give up several days of work from elsewhere to come here. So while I want ICE abolished, and I want the policies we're doing changed, and I want the public to be aware of things and to see how they are the ones violating the law, in the interim, I'm very concerned about the safety and well-being of immigrants who have to check in if they can't check in Portland.
All right, Edie, that's a really good question. Thank you so much for calling this morning. And for other folks wanting to call, 503-231-8187. Francisco, what do you think about that question? If ICE wasn't actually in a population center like Portland, does that make it harder for immigrant families?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. You know, it's a really good question. And we believe ICE, no matter how you see it, it should move out of Portland. And how it will affect people, I don't think it will affect no one. I think it will bring more peace to our community, because immigration been going on for years, and we did not have the necessity to have ICE agents in Portland or in Oregon to be doing those check-ins. I think it's a waste of time having us going through those check-ins. It's just to control us. They have the 1-800 number to communicate and to do all the process that is necessary. And our lawyers have all the tools to work with.
And so you're saying that actually physically being present at an ICE office isn't really necessary.
Exactly.
It hadn't been necessary before this policy change of only a couple years, few years. So why is it necessary now?
Yes, we don't need ICE.
All right. Thanks very much for that question, Edie. I think that, you know, really looking at the long-term story of immigration in this country, with a couple of notable exceptions, those being the indigenous people that were here on this continent before there were borders, right? And folks that were brought here involuntarily as slaves and as slave labor. Other than that, folks are here because of immigration. And that, you know, my family, the family I was adopted into, were recent arrivals from Britain after World War II. And some of them became naturalized citizens. Some of them remained permanent residents. One of them got held up at Ellis Island for a long time and was not readily allowed in. And so I grew up with stories of what it was like to immigrate from a pretty privileged country, right? That didn't have language barriers or didn't, you know, that spoke English and were still having a hell of a time trying to make it in the 60s, you know, coming over all as a group, as a family. And there wasn't a need for check-ins. There wasn't a need for, that was not a part of the story. So when did that start, you know, and what is that for? I think, Francisco, you make an excellent point that it is there as a control and not as anything else.
Exactly. That's what it is. They control us. And they take that chance to harass us, you know. And I live that every time that I have to go through those check-ins, you know. They take it against me for what I do. They don't like me because I'm an activist, because I defend human rights. I defend workers and immigrant rights.
Yeah. And so these points of contact then are increased. You know, you were talking about the fear that you live with constantly, but now the idea that you have to actually go into an ICE facility to have it's like your period of abuse, you know?
Yeah.
Right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Do please join us this morning. I want to let folks know, coming up, excuse me, at 9 o'clock on KBOO, you will be hearing One Land, Many Voices. a show exploring the political, social, and cultural issues affecting Israel and Palestine. At 10 a.m., Valley Views with Dale Holliday continues its series on death and end-of-life care. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, Pacific Underground takes to the airwaves. It's a show for and by the Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. All of these programs are made possible by your support, dear members. So please, if you are not yet a contributing member of KBOO, you can take care of that problem right now. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate. So 503-231-8187. I want to talk for a moment about the headlines that have been made this week. There's been a couple of pretty horrific things. One is that we've seen a second small child die in custody, in ICE custody. It's the second child, I believe, from Guatemala, in fact. Both of the children, 8-year-olds, dying have been from Guatemala. And that is, again, sort of pricking the conscience, that there is treatment and neglect going on in these private detention facilities that are certainly not saving lives, right? There is some question as to whether the neglect or treatment was causative in the fact that these children have died. But it really troubling to say the least when we are seeing children held in custody who are in fact dying with signs of potential illnesses being ignored. Can you speak to that, Francisco?
Yes, it's really really sad topic to talk about, but we cannot stay quiet about families, kids that they running away, they fleeing violence in their country. They trying to save their life, So they flee their country, trying to get into U.S., the country who actually came to our countries and destroyed our economy. And now they saying you are not welcome, but they are letting our kids die in jail.
Yeah.
What we are thinking, why? And don't take me wrong, we are not trying to say that, hey, we don't want laws in this country. I think what we are saying is let's be more humane, let's protect our kids, let's protect our families, but the government, it's actually destroying our families. It's, can you imagine making laws that it's allowed on ICE or Border Patrol agent to just let a kid die and be free without any consequences? Yeah. I think that's wrong.
To ignore cries for help, to ignore symptoms. It is, certainly we've seen this over and over again with the private detention centers. And then actually, let's talk about the fact that these are private detention centers. These ICE contracts with private corporations to run the detention centers. And we know that there have been ongoing issues with quality of food, with forced labor. Can you talk about some of the conditions of the ICE detention centers?
Yes. ICE, it's built there. A really good network for them want to wash their hands and say, oh, it's not us who's responsible for those kids dying in jail because we hire a private company to do it.
So it gives them a layer of protection, like a little plausible deniability.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And these private companies, they are making billions of dollars from us. So they treating us as merchandise to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
They make amounts of money putting bracelet onto immigrants, keep them in jail, but at the same time, they don't have the necessary needs, you know, that the immigrants actually need when they detain them. They are in inhumane, you know, situation inside those jails. I've been in jail where ICE keep you, you know, in custody, and it's horrible. They treat you as a criminal. They treat you so bad that it create that trauma, you know, that once you go out, it's really hard to...
Well, and to underscore the idea, I see sometimes in comments people that have no understanding of what immigration violations are. When you say, well, they treat you as a criminal, I've seen comments that would indicate some people think that that's great, you know, because people that are without documents, people that break immigration policy are criminals. But in fact, they're not. Right?
Exactly.
And that this is maybe a little more nuanced than a lot of folks that aren't used to thinking, you know, are able to deal with. But that nuance is that immigration policy is immigration policy. Breaking immigration policy does not make you a criminal. It is not, it's not a felony to
exactly.
do this.
Right? Exactly.
And yet we see in those detention centers exactly what you're talking about, the humiliation, the mistreatment. That sort of tough guy teaching these folks a lesson,
yes.
and dehumanizing the population.
That's exactly what is going on. And you know, one thing, it's a lot of people love to say publicly, you know, hey, you are breaking the law, you coming into our country without proper documentation, and that make you illegal in this country. Why you don't wait in line? And it made me think which line they are talking about. There is no waiting line for us. That's not true. You know, we apply for a visa in our country. We paid for every meeting with the United States, you know, ambassador to apply for that visa. And then they just take our money and say, nope, you don't qualify.
Right.
So which line we are talking about? If there is a line, we will get in line, we will apply and come into U.S. with the proper document that they're talking about, but that's not true.
Right. Well, in asylum seeking, it also just shows a complete misunderstanding or lack of understanding about what asylum seeking is and how this is actually a part of international law and has been for decades.
Yes.
So I think a lot of folks are... that don't understand that actually are advocating that the U.S. break with longstanding tradition and custom when it comes to international human rights. And that is a scary situation for me.
Definitely is.
But we know that there are many more people who are good-hearted, good-thinking individuals who are concerned and are wanting to be a part of the resistance. So let's talk now a little bit more about Occupy ICE PDX, which is one of the local groups carrying on the struggle, and you're both organizers with Occupy ICE PDX. So the camp itself lasted a couple months, and then there's been different focal points for Occupy ICE PDX since that time, including a stint at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's going on with Occupy ICE PDX? We haven't really heard so much from them as a group for a minute. So let's get some updates out there. What's going on?
So first of all, I want to send a big shout out to the member of the Occupied ICE PDX for the excellent work that they've been doing and they keep doing in it. So what is going on now after the they sweep up the camp? Occupied ICE PDX has been pretty active working, you know, and preparing a new agenda, new strategies to keep defeating ICE. We've been meeting. We getting prepared for new actions, and people will be hearing about and decide if they want to join us. Occupied ICE is dreaming on growing, extend our tentacles, you know, not only in Portland but outside Portland, and we are dreaming to even have a national movement again. like when we begin, you know, mm-hmm. doing the occupied eyes, that it spread around the country. So we've been meeting and planning. A good strategy always involves, you know, a good planning. So that's what Occupied Eyes PDX are doing. But also, we are doing standing out, you know, in front of eyes. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to help people, you know. We recently spot a family, you know, who was actually part of that caravan from Honduras. And it's here, and we are working with the family. And if there is more people, you know, who need help, get in touch with Occupied Eyes PDX.
And how do people get in touch with Occupy Eyes PDX?
We have a Facebook page, Occupy Eyes PDX. And there's also a group attached to that. Anybody is welcome to join and message the group.
You have a regular presence at the McAdam Ice Center, as Francisco was just saying. What is that a thing that is like a weekly presence, or is that like, can people know when it's going to happen next and join you?
It was actually a trial, like 72-hour Eyes on Ice little action, which we shifted people out every 4 hours so that we were never sleeping there or kind of crossing any lawful boundaries. And we just kept our eyes on the building, basically, and watched as the officers covered their license plates when they were coming out. They were very afraid of our presence. And realistically, though, I don't know that that's a sustainable thing to do throughout the winter. So we are thinking about other actions that we can take, which do include actions at the ICE building, involving lots of different organizations as well.
Mm-hmm. And so do you have anything planned in the near future that people could plug into?
So for now, we don't have a specific action. We will be marching. Mm-hmm. I believe on that
January in the J20.
Yes, January 20. We will be marching, and we will have more information at the Occupied Eyes PDX soon. So if you want to join us, you are welcome to do it. So please stay tuned and visit the Facebook page, so you can get more information about the Occupied Eyes PDX. What we are trying to accomplish when we go and do those stand out, you know, in front of the eyes, one, it's to see how can we help the families coming into their check-ins. There is so many families that they coming in and they don't know what it's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have lawyers. They just taking the ICE agent's advice, you know, and ICE.
And that's a very vulnerable position.
It is.
Right?
Because it is.
So these families are probably under a lot of stress, without resources, without a clear idea on actually what the law is, and vulnerable to being to following whatever ICE tells them.
Exactly. ICE is terrible. ICE will lie to you. ICE never tell the truth. What they want is deport you, yeah. No matter what. Even if you are in danger to get killed back in your country, they don't care. Mm-hmm. They will lie and deport you.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is Positively Revolting. I am Ani. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station. In studio this morning, I have Francisco Aguirre and Amy Sitars. They are here talking about Occupy ICE PDX and updating folks on the situation with ICE detention. And we have Karen. Karen is next up. Good morning, Karen. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani and Francisco. I just wanted to share some information from an article that appeared in Yes Magazine, and it's about why the migrant caravan story is a climate change story. And the reason I wanted to share it in part is because it's not just our humanity that we have to keep honoring and cultivating as citizens here. and opening our hearts to people, but it's our responsibility because we are in large part responsible for much of the migration from Central America. And the reason for that is not only that our policies towards Central America have been devastating, and we've supported dictatorship, financed, armed, and trained.
Yeah.
But also because we produce so much CO2 in this country. With only 5% of the world's population, we produce, we're the second in line after China in terms of CO2, and our military is the biggest single producer of pollution, of carbon pollution. So when the caravans are coming, or I don't like the word because it's so, it's been used in a pejorative manner, but when the human beings are coming in large numbers, it's in part because of a so-called dry corridor, according to this article in Yes Magazine by Todd Miller. There's a dry corridor in Central America, and it stretches from southern Mexico to Panama, and it's arisen, droughts have risen in intensity and frequency over the last 10 years, Todd Miller's article says. And so crop failure, drought, storms, land disputes are all part of the picture that drive the poor folks up here.
So, Karen, what you're doing is, I mean, you're painting a picture that is really complex. That
I am, I'm also trying to emphasize that people who are so-called citizens here are responsible for, in many ways, politically and in terms of CO2 production, for this migration. And so we need to have, we need to rewrite our asylum laws. We need to say that people fleeing droughts and climate change events are also refugees, and they should get official refugee status. So that's a fairly simple point, I think, isn't it, Ani?
Well, yeah, no, but I think what I appreciate is that you are speaking to the complexity of the fact that it is a history of our colonialist practices and the Iran-Contra history and the dirty wars of Central America that the CIA orchestrated. It is that, and it is also the combined effects of climate change and the disruption to the weather systems that are in large part caused by the global giants, the U.S. and to a somewhat lesser extent Europe. You know, that is, again, causing an additional layer of disruption and driving migration.
Yes. Thank you so much, Ani, for having Francisco on, too, because, Francisco, I went to down to the immigration court building along with a whole bunch of folks. There were maybe 60 of us there when you came in for one of your hearings. And when people were monitoring us with the metal detectors, they said, "Well, who is Francisco? Is he a very famous person?" And I said, "He is just a really nice human being who's caught in a really bad situation." So that's the folks who are monitoring your support groups don't even know who you are, Francisco. So I just wanted to let you know that not all of them are the enemy. They're caught in a bad situation too, probably. But have a wonderful day, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
To both of you. All right. Bye bye.
Thanks very much. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. Please do join us in this conversation. Next up, we have Tim from Ice Resistance in the Gorge. Good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani.
Good morning.
Hi to Amy. Hi. And Francisco.
Hello, hello.
Amy, I want to thank you, Amy, for coming out on Saturday. I guess I didn't recognize you from the time before coming out to the Dalles to commemorate over 600 days of consecutive vigil outside of Norcor.
Yes.
And NorCor is the large facility outside or in the Dalles that is an ICE detention facility and transfer station.
It's actually has a contract with ICE for holding people who come from Tacoma, and it's it's been ramped up in the last few years to basically become a cash flow to support the operations of the jail. So it's done primarily for monetary gain, just basically beds for rent is what they tell us. So so we've been basically aware of this for just about 2 years now, and we are slowly making progress. What I wanted to speak to is about how we engage our fellow citizens. All of the things you've talked about at Causal, as far as the last 40 to 50 years with intervention and imperialist corporate basically abuse of economies around the world and the refugee crisis that it has created. People really don't have a unified or a consistent picture of that history. A lot of people, older people, have either forgotten it or they still deny it, hoping that things are going to work out just the way, you know, we were told as young people. But that is really at the core of, I believe, especially in the Western Hemisphere, the refugee crisis created by economic exploitation. But I think the most important thing is, I want to mention to Amy about her bronze shoes. They've been on our site twice now. We really appreciate the message there. They were with the flowers earlier this summer. They were on the fence, and some of them actually ended up over the fence after the actions.
Allegedly.
And that stimulated a response from the jail administration, particularly the administrator, who is not a citizen of Oregon, or was not a citizen. He was from Alaska, who had actually no stake in our community, and we have successfully forced him out. He resigned in June and has actually left the premises, but he's still on contract till the end of the year. He has little or no influence right now, but he was the primary cause of a lot of suffering and black site and black ops type treatment of detainees in NorCor for the last several years. We were successful.
Tim, can you talk a little bit more about what that means for listeners? Can you unpack that a little bit? What do you mean by he was responsible for a lot of the treatment, like treating detainees like it was a black ops site?
We have been working with MARU and the Northwest Detention Center Resistance Team. We share information. We have clergy going into the jail twice a week. We have lawyers available. We have a fund established through Ecumenical Ministries to get the people inside the detainees to get their phones, phone accounts loaded so they can get a hold of their lawyers and their families. There's let people know there is no in-person visitation allowed at NorCor, whereas at the Northwest Detention Center, that is a regular feature of detention there. So we believe that NorCor not only has this contract, a lucrative contract, receiving money from ICE for every day that someone is detained, but the detainees are selectively vetted to come to NorCor to be softened up, to encourage self-deportation. And that's what we have concluded through this work, hearing the stories. Some people are shipped back to Northwest Detention Center for a hearing or medical reasons, and then they come back. They tell us the same thing. We don't like it at NorCorps. We're threatened with coming to NorCorps. I really wanted to just touch base on the, not necessarily that, but the way we are going to go forward in engaging our community. So our rural community is quite different than the urban community. You are directly dealing with ICE officially in a location. We are dealing with ICE as a absentee landlord. So we have to deal with our local officials, county commissioners, the sheriffs. So on Saturday when you guys left, I saw the shoes on the fence, and I was wondering how you were going to leave it. I didn't want to necessarily intervene, but the shoes ended up over the fence, and that has stimulated another conversation. So the sheriff, one sheriff who is the current administrator, is quite angry about that, because one pair of shoes was, he said, was tied together with a piece of wire, which could be considered a weapon inside of the facility. So we have a face-to-face sit-down scheduled with the sheriff next Wednesday. And I'm racking my brain. This is a guy I have talked to for more than 2 years, and seems like he's leaning in and listening to us. So that's my challenge, is to get these messages to people in a human way without backing down from our position that detaining people this way is inhumane and it's basically illegal and it's un-American, the true ideals of America. So I encourage people to go to a place where your language is effective, but choose your words carefully and your actions carefully, and speak in a nonviolent way. Anyway, that's just kind of where I'm at.
Hey, Tim, thanks very much for your work.
Yeah.
And thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thanks, Ani.
And also, just let's leave contact information also, because I know, of course, KABU signal reaches. And so for folks that are interested in working with ICE resistance in the Gorge, how do they get in touch?
Gorge ICE Resistance has a Facebook page. That's how a lot of, in fact, Danielle was out from ICE, Occupy ICE PDX. Mm-hmm. About five or six other people came out. We also have a fund established where people can donate online to the detainees. It's for legal purposes and for phone accounts, and it's at Gorge Ecumenical Ministries. It's based in Hood River, and it's a interfaith organization who has been very, very active in going into the jail for the last 2 years. Clergy twice a week go in for 3 hours, Mondays and Fridays. So Gorge Ecumenical Ministries, there's a donate button. That money will be used to directly support the detainees' legal and commissary and phone accounts. So I encourage people to donate if they're able to. So.
All right. Tim, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thanks, honey.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We have just about 10 minutes left of the show. So if you have questions, comments, something to add, please call now and do that thing. 503-231-8187. This is Positively Revolting. I want to encourage you to follow along throughout the week, because once a week is never enough. You can find us on Facebook, Positively Revolting. You can also follow us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. I'm Ani, and I'm here with Francisco and Amy. They are organizers with Occupy ICE PDX, and just doing some updating, making sure that this issue doesn't fall away from our consciousness as it has fallen away from headlines. And because, again, the ongoing I want to say tragedy, but that's not quite the word. It's like it's a human-made tragedy because it's made by our policies. It's made by inhumane laws. It's made by the Trump administration's xenophobia and political games that people's lives are being used as pawns. And so it's in that light, I guess I could say tragedy. It just is a real horror that this country is in the process of. And I personally want to make sure that no one can say, I didn't know what was happening. I didn't do anything because I didn't know it was happening. That's the kind of plausible deniability that we don't need, right? So again, with only, gosh, a little less than 10 minutes left, looking at getting people involved and the visions of the movement and plans for the future, knowing that, you know, plans are apt to change. But what do you want to see happen in the next 6 months, Francisco? What are your hopes for this growing movement?
I hope to see more the more community members, you know, join us on fighting, you know, against this ICE in Portland. But I don't want to go without honoring and remember the memory of my son Moses, who actually died, you know. And I've been saying it, and I will keep saying it, no matter if our government feel bad about my comments and keep asking me to keep silence, threatening me to put me in jail for what I believe. But they are responsible for the death of my son. Because what happened, you know, with me and how they scare my son, now he's dead. He was killed back in El Salvador when he returned, you know. But I would like to invite people to please join us and again visit our Facebook page, Occupied Eyes PDX, and get involved. We need your support. The migrant community need your support, and we will love to have you with us.
Amy, what's your vision for this next 6 months? What do you want to see people doing, or how do you want to see the movement evolve?
I think it's really important to get involved with City Hall and the commissioners and talk about some ways that we can actually get ICE out of that building and out of Portland. I've been doing a lot of research and
sort of holding the city to its promise of being a sanctuary city.
Exactly.
So now it's more like sanctuary city and lip service only.
Exactly. Right. Right. Also, I'm looking forward to some of the actions that we're planning coming up in order to make our movement more visible and therefore gaining support of other community members. And I just want to say about the shoes in the dolls really quickly. The shoes are to start a conversation. And I apologize if anyone feels in danger in that conversation, but I actually am very, very glad to hear that there's going to be a sit-down with a local law enforcement to talk about this, because that is the point. It's a conversation that needs to continue to happen.
And that is, I mean, really political art as a whole is there to start conversations. I mean, that is, I'm going to go ahead and say that's the purpose of art, period. Mm-hmm. You know, but especially as you have worked with mediums to draw focus for political means. Mm-hmm. Again, in the bronze shoes, you have a message. Mm-hmm. That often goes with the shoes, or more recently is mm-hmm. going with the shoes. Can you say what that message is, that the tag that is mm-hmm. attached to the shoes?
Yeah, the whole project is constantly evolving, and so just not too long ago I started adding the tag to the shoes, and it reads very closely to these bronze shoes are representation of the children who are separated from their families and there to let people know that they are precious and we will not forget them. We can't just go on with our daily lives forgetting what's happening down there. And so this is just to help people stay focused and keep the conversation going.
I know that, you know, this is also that time of year, right, where we have nativity scenes. And I'm just going to throw it out there, since you were pretty public about doing this, that you had another incident of political art involving a nativity scene. You mm-hmm. want to mention that? Or should I just stop talking?
I think most people in town are aware of Peacock Lane that opens every December with beautifully decorated houses with Christmas lights. And it has become so popular that the other night when I went down there, there were so many people on the sidewalks, you couldn't barely take a step forward. Like, we were shuffling through this line to just be blinded by these sparkling lights. And I myself and some comrades took a cage that I had put together and put baby Jesus in the cage at the house that had the nativity scene. And nobody really noticed that I had done that or was doing it. The only thing I heard was one guy say to his kid, "This is what's happening now." And I was grateful to hear that conversation being started.
It is a little, I have to say, when you mentioned that to me earlier, I was like, wow. So no one notices political art. Well, welcome to Portland. Anyways, thank you for your efforts in that. We have just a moment left, so I want people to give out that contact. Any final thoughts wrapping up today's show? We do have just 3 minutes left. So how do people get in touch? What's the biggest thing to watch right now?
Again, the Facebook page, Occupy ICE PDX. I think the next big thing that's coming up is the J20 action. We will be marching alongside some other organizations in Portland and speaking about ICE's role in the community and how they're affecting the immigrant community.
And anything from you, Francisco? What's the thing coming up that you are looking at most closely?
I think I will use the moment to invite the other organizations to please help us spread the word about the movement of Occupied ICE PDX and promote our Facebook page, you know, Occupied ICE PDX, because we need more people. And I hope to have the Facebook page also in the Spanish version pretty soon, so our migrant people can join us and read, you know, what is going on and make that decision to join us.
Right on. I couldn't help but notice that this morning Trump is threatening to close the border, period, permanently. And of course, you know, he does this by tweet in the early hours of this morning. So in the face of that idiocy and onwards to the struggle, I thank both of you for joining us this morning on KABU. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your efforts. And we'll make sure that we keep the listeners updated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll be back in the new year.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Progressive Spirit. This week I speak with Dr. Aisha Juman about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen.
You know, what is sad for me as a Yemeni American, it's heartbreaking for me when I go to Yemen. And what the people see, they say without the U.S. support, the Saudi cannot conduct this war. So they consider this war an American war.
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place in Portland. The film hosts the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic stress, the lack of effective treatment, and their search for healing. This is a crowdsourced event and tickets are currently available for purchase. There will be a brief Q&A following the film. Again, that's a screening of the film From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at Regal Cinemas, Pioneer Place, 340 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO is One Land, Many Voices, exploring the political, social, and cultural issues affecting Israel and Palestine. At 10, Valley Views continues its series on death and end-of-life care. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Pacific Underground is a show for, by, Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. If you're not yet a member, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
We've had 50 years of assault on Palestinian rights. I think they're the most terrorized, or at least with the Iraqi people, they're the most terrorized people on earth, and have been for